So welcome to this session. I'm very excited to be here today because approximately 1 year ago, I was standing in this room and talking to you about MVVM, and it was an introduction session. Last year, we talked about the history of MVVM. We understood what is its relation to MVC, to the passive view pattern, and also the presentation model pattern, and we understood that it's approximately the same thing. We cleared some confusion around MVVM. We understood that it is really just a pattern. And like every pattern, there are multiple implementations. We also understood that you have some components which are, you know, marketed under the moniker MVVM, which are actually just there to help you build those decoupled applications. We made a non-MVVM application, and we connected it to a WCF web service. And we saw the disadvantages of that approach. For example, the fact that the view is very tightly coupled to the service. And also the fact that if you open that in Expression Blend, you will not actually see the data. So you will not be able to design it visually. So we refactored this application to an MVVM application. And we made it blendable. We created design time data. We talked about additional components, for example, the relay command, also known as event, also known as delegate command. We talked about the messenger, also known as event aggregator. We talked about the MVVM Lite toolkit, and you also had the chance to sit in this room and hear Rob Eisenberg talk about the Caliburn framework, which can be used to build those decoupled applications. Finally, we did a more complex demo where we introduced additional concepts, like for example, the view model locator, which you can use to create your view models, to wire them together with the services, and to expose them so that they can be data bound to the view. So it was a cool session. Everybody had fun. We had, you know, good feedback. And then we went back home, worked on real-life applications, and then came the questions. For example, how do you avoid redundancy? How do you do when you have a data object and you want to wrap it in a data view model, and you want to avoid replicating all the properties, because that would be redundant? How do you start animations from the view model? How do you show dialogues from the view model and get user feedback? How do you do navigation from the view model? So in summary, every time that you have an interaction from the view model to the view, it's a little bit tricky in MVVM. How do you do all that? How do you handle multiple view models? Very often we see demos with just one view and one view model, but our real-life applications have multiple views and multiple view models. So how do you create them? How do you bind them to the view? How do you make them communicate, but in a loose manner? Also, how do you unit test the view models, especially when you have some services which are injected into them? So, in summary, what you told me is, you know, we spent a good time, we tested the water, we played, that was cool. But now, this is what we really want to do. We want to do a deep dive into MVVM. That's what we are going to do during this hour. This hour, we'll have a lot of code and a lot of demos, and it's probably going to be a little bit fast-paced. However, the videos are going to be made available in a couple of days, as well as the sample code, which will be on my blog. So you have a chance to get that and to redo it at your own pace. The first demo we are going to do is an application which is connecting to a JSON service. Last year, we did a WCF data service. WCF has some advantages, like, for example, the fact that you can create the proxy, the data objects, automatically. But it also has some disadvantages. For example, WCF transmits quite a lot of data on the wire. And when you work with phones where you pay for data, you want to avoid that. So this year we are going to go with JSON, and we are going to see a little bit the challenges of this approach. Now here I have a client server application, and my web server is very simple. It is going to read a text file. This text file is formatted as JSON, so it is a list of friends. In fact, it is a simulation of the Facebook API. The JSON is exactly the same. On the client, I'm using pretty much the same setups that I had last year. I have an iFriend service, which is an abstraction, a high-level data service. And here I have a method called getFriends, which is going to be executed asynchronously, like all web methods in Silverlight. Since it is asynchronous, I need to give it a callback. And this callback is having two parameters. The first one is a list of friends, and the second one is an exception in case something went wrong. Now, this friend object is interesting. Last year, we had a customer object, which was actually generated for me by WCF when I was connecting to the WCF service. This year, we do JSON, so we do a little bit more manual work. Let's take a look at this class. It's a very simple class, which is basically just exposing a few properties. And in fact, we want to keep it that way, because the data transfer object should be as close from the service as possible. Also, you don't want to add view properties into that, such as visibility, etc. This is going to make the serialization of this object more difficult. And serializing is very important, especially when you do work for the phone, because you tombstone your applications every time you go to standby, every time you switch your phone off. So you want to make that an easier process if you can. So we are going to keep that class as simple as possible. However, I want to add some new properties, which are really for my data template. So I'm going to wrap this object into a friend view model. Now let's add a property. This property is called older than me indicator visibility. Now I'm turning 40 tomorrow, and when you're 40, you start having a different look on your younger friends, okay? Because they listen to some weird music and, you know, they come back late at home, etc., etc. So I'm going to make sure that I can recognize them. I'm going to make them red in my friends list. And my older friends, the guys who are safe, I'm going to make them green. I'm going to do this with a visibility, which is okay because I'm on the friend view model. I can still test the value of this visibility property. I can test if it's visible or collapsed. What you don't want to have is UI elements in your view. But things like visibility or brush, like for example a solid color brush, you can expose that as properties. Now that I have this, let's take a look to the UI. This is the UI we are going to do. It is, in that case, a Silverlight 4 application. So we have the page, and then we have two views. The first one is a master view. The other one is a details view. Both of them are implemented as user control, so they are very encapsulated, and in fact, they don't know each other, and we want to keep it that way. Now here, I have the list of my friends. Notice that this is fully blendable, so I can see all my design time data. And here, this is the data template for the friend. By default, they are all red. Now let's change that. I'm going to open the masterview.xaml. And I'm going to add a rectangle which is green. And then I'm going to toggle the visibility of that rectangle. Now, this is a template we just saw. I'm going to take the rectangle here. And I'm going to bind its visibility to the older than me indicator visibility that we just added before. This is on the friend view model. That's the data context of this template. So I can do that. However, for the other properties, like picture URI, first name, last name, date of birth, I don't want to replicate those properties, so I'm going to bind through the model directly on the friend class. Now, there is just a little problem with that approach. If I check the UI, I see that in the details, I can edit the properties of the friend class. But in that particular case, it's not going to be propagated to the rest of the application. So if I change it here, I want the change to appear in my master as well. So basically, I need to raise the property change event on the friend class. But I also want to keep this class as simple as possible. So how can I do that? I'm going to go back to the friend, and I'm going to make it inherit observable object. Observable object is a new class in MVVM Lite version 4. It is a very, very simple implementation of iNotify property changed. So it's an implementation which doesn't have any view properties like ease in design mode, etc. In fact, now ViewModelBase, which is a base class for your view models, inherits observable object. So now even though my friend can raise a property change event, it is still a very low level, very simple object. Now at this point I can remove this automatic property. And instead I'm going to use the well-known snippet MVVM INPC to add a property which is raising the property change event. So I name that date of birth. I need to make it a date time. I'm going to name the field DOB. And let's initialize that to date time dot mean value. I need to delete a couple of lines of code because here I just want to raise the property change event. But I do not want to also broadcast that through the messenger. So here I just raise the property change event when the date of birth changes. So I add some dynamism in my object. Now I'm going to do the same for first name and last name. To be a little bit faster, I'm just going to drag and drop that. And here we see a disadvantage of MVVM that we discussed last year. Those properties are taking quite a lot of lines of code. But this code is pretty harmless. It doesn't do much. So in fact, this friend object is still a low-level, pretty bare-bone data transfer object. It can be serialized, and it is quite simple. So I can live with that. Now one thing I need to do, since the date of birth can change, in my friend view model, it means that this older than me indicator visibility can also change. If I want the binding to that property to be updated, I also need to raise the property change event on this class. To do that, I'm going to add the name of the property as a constant. I work with constants every time I have to do something with magic strings. Then I'm going to attach to the property change event of my friend class. And if I see that the property is date of birth, I'm going to raise my own property change event for older than me indicator visibility. Like this, the bindings will be updated. Okay, so now we still need to take care of something. Those friends here need to be passed from one view model to the other. And we want to do that in a decoupled manner. So in fact, I want every time the user is going to click on one of those friends, I want to send it to the details. Now this is a perfect task for the messenger. By the way, we see now that this logic of calculating if I'm older or younger than my friends works in Blend as well, right? So you can really do your templating and your styling there. Now to send the message, what I'm going to do is go to the master view model. And here I have a property called selected friend. This property is data bound to the selected item of the list box. So it's going to change. The setter is going to be called every time that the user clicks on one of those friends. And here what I want to do is not just raise the property change event. I'm going to comment that out. But in fact, I want to use the other overload, which is raising the property change event and also sending the old value and the new value through the messenger. So we are going to send a message of type property changed message of friend view model. So that was pretty simple. Now what we want to do is receive the message. For that, I go into the details view model. I also have here a selected friend, which is data bound to the fields that we just saw. And here I'm going to register to receive the property changed message of friend view model. And when I receive one, I'm going to assign it to my selected friend. Okay? So now at this point, I can run my application. I can refresh the list of friends. Here we go. By the way, I want to, oh, something is not working right. I think what I did is that it took the old version. I'm just going to rebuild just to make sure. And refresh that. Okay, for some reason before it just didn't reload the actual XAP file, okay? So now I just want to, by the way, say thank you to everybody who sent me their details. It was very helpful. What we see here is that, you know, I have good friends, and there are more reds than greens. So I'm old. Now if I select Teresa, which is a good proof that I do have friends who are actually girls, I can change her first name, and I see that it was propagated to the master through the property changed. Okay? So I'm still very decoupled, but I still have this link through the bindings. If I change Teresa's date of birth to make her older than me, I see that she's green now, probably with rage. So she's green now, which means that the older than me indicator visibility was also updated. Okay? Now, this works fine because I have both of my views on the same page, so they are both created at the same time. So when I send the message from the master to the details, I know that the details is here. But if we bring that on the phone, we have a small issue because I will have two pages on the phone. I will have one page for the master and one page for the details. Both pages do not leave at the same time. So how can I send messages anyway? I'm going to show you one strategy to create view models, and then later we will see another strategy which works in a different scenario. Okay? Now, this scenario here, I have two view models which are pretty large in the sense they are very significant to the application. They have also a long lifetime. Okay? I'm pretty sure that my user during the lifetime of my application is going to go to the details. So I can say it's safe to create that from the start of the application. I'm going to create my view models, keep them in memory, okay? And then expose them so that they can be bound to the view. Later, we will see another strategy, which is more useful when you have a lot of small view models. They are short-lived, and you want to create them on demand. You don't want to keep them all in memory. But for now, let's go with that. The management of the lifetime of the view models is done in MVVM Lite in the view model locator. This object is exposed in app.xaml as a global resource. Here we go. And this is here that I'm going to create my view models. Now, last year, I showed a demo using the Unity IOC container. This year, I'm introducing a new class in MVVM Lite version 4, which is called Simple IOC. Why did I do that? Well, it's mostly because there are so many very good IOC containers that I don't want to force one on the user, okay? You probably all have the one that you prefer. But I also wanted to have something out of the box. So if you want to use Simple IOC to do your IOC container, you can. But it's not super powerful, okay? It's good for view models and services and stuff. But if you want something which is a little bit more solid, you might want to consider Unity or Structure Map or Castle Windsor, etc. Okay? Simple IOC is actually following the common service locator, so it's implementing iService locator, which means it can be swapped very easily for another IOC of your choice. Here, I am registering a design friend service, which is in charge of creating all my design time data for the iFriend service interface. And I do that only if I am in design mode. Now, if I am not in design mode, I'm going to register the actual friend service implementation, still for iFriend service. Then I'm going to register here the master view model. And by the way, the master view model in the constructor takes an iFriend service, so the injection is going to be handled by Simple IOC. And then I'm going to make sure that I have one instance of master view model in the container. And now I'm doing the same for details view model. So I create them from the start. Okay? And now I'm going to expose those two as properties. So why do I still expose as properties? Well, we did quite a lot of trials and errors and research in the community. And this is still the best way to have 100% blendability, including the properties editor, the data binding editor, including everything. Okay? So I'm still exposing those view models, which are, again, long-lived, okay, as properties. But still, overall, my view model locator is quite clean, thanks to the usage of an IOC container. So now that we know that those two view models live in memory from the start of the application, the phone problem is trivial. I'm just going to add an existing project, which I prepared. And this project is sharing all the design time data, all the service, all the model, and all the view model code, 100%. The only thing that changes is the XAML. So let's go to WP7. Now, just a reminder, if you want to share code like that in Visual Studio, what you can do is go here to the view model, right click, for example, add existing item, go to the folder or the items that you want to copy, going to select all, and instead of clicking on add, I click on add as a link. So I'm adding a shortcut to those files. They will be considered during the build, but they don't live physically on the disk. I only have one such physical file. I did the same for model and for the design folder. Now I can set this as startup and run this in the phone. Here we go. So now I see I can refresh the list of my friends. Here we go. And now if I click, for example, on Ali's, I go to the details. So the message was sent and received, even though my views don't live in the same time frame. And this is the other one. Okay? So again, this is one strategy to create your view models and expose them. Later, we will see another strategy, which is better when you have a little bit more dynamism in your view models and you want to create them on demand. So now I'm going to talk about view model to view communication. You could do something like that. I can go in my view model and display a message box. But it's a bad idea because, first of all, you cannot style it at all. Okay? You don't have any control on how it looks like. And also, you cannot test that. How can you make sure in a unit test that the message box was displayed? Also, for animations and navigation, it's very difficult because you don't have a reference to the view in the view model. And in fact, you don't want to have one. So this is making things hard. And also, it's very hard to design. You need to go and edit the view model code in order to change the appearance of the message box, for example. So basically, you don't want to do that. Instead, I'm going to show you two strategies. The first strategy is going to use a behavior. Behaviors are small pieces of code behind which are encapsulated and reusable. We are going to connect to the behavior using a binding. So this is a loose coupling, and also it's highly blendable. Okay? You can drag and drop your behaviors in Blend and configure them in the properties editor visually. The other strategies I'm proposing here is one where you write a little bit more code, but also you have a little bit more control over what the code does. We are going to create an iDialog service interface, which has methods to show a message, show an exception, and maybe get some feedback from the user. And we are going to inject that into the view model. And then I'm going to create an implementation of that, and the implementation is going to act with a view. We are going to do the same for the navigation service, also an implementation and action. Let's start with the behaviors. What I'm going to add now is an animation when an asynchronous operation is running. So I'm going to do that in the master view model. And I'm going to add a property called isBusy, which is a Boolean. It's raising the property changed event, so I can bind to that. Now, just before I call the asynchronous method, I'm going to set isBusy to true. And then I'm going to set that to false when I have an error. Or if everything went well at the very end of my callback. So that you can test, okay? It's a simple Boolean property. You can test if it toggles properly. Now let's do a little bit blend. In blend, I'm going to edit the master view, and I'm going to add a cache in front of everything with an animation. And this is all going to be triggered by the isBusy property. So this is my master view. I'm going to go and add a cache here, a grid. And I'm going to make it opaque. Let's make it white. And I'm going here to make it a little bit transparent. Then I'm going to take an ellipse. And I'm going to place it here. I'm going to make the stroke transparent. And the fill, I'm going to create a radial gradient brush. I'm going to move the center a little bit here. And then let's make it a little bit more colorful. Blend on a small screen is a bit challenging, but we got it. I'm going to make it a little bit more colorful. For example, something like that. Okay, now I want this ellipse to rotate. So I'm going to create a new animation. And I'm going to call that the please wait animation. I will go to 800 milliseconds, more or less, select the ellipse. Oops, here we go. And I'm going to, after 800 seconds, say that I want it to rotate by 360 degrees. So now this is a very linear animation, okay, very boring. So I'm going to click on the keyframe and add some acceleration. I'm going to choose here a cubic in-out, meaning that it will go slow first, accelerate, and then end slow. And this is how it looks like now. So it's a little bit more lifelike and dynamic. Now I'm going to select the animation. I'm going to need a little bit more space here. Okay, and I'm going to set auto reverse to true. I want my ellipse to rotate and then come back. And I'm going to say you must do that forever. Okay, now I'm going to select the grid and hide it because normally it doesn't show. To hide it, I'm going to set the opacity to zero, but now it's still in the way of my mouse. So I want to also set the visibility to collapsed. And then I'm going to create states for this control. I'm going to make a busy states group with two states. One of them is not busy, and the other one is busy. And I'm going to say when I am in the busy state, I want my user control to look like that. First of all, at zero, I'm going to set the visibility on visible. And then after approximately 300 milliseconds, I want the opacity to be 100%. So I have a smooth transition. So now I have my states and I have my animation. But I still need to toggle the states and start and stop the animation, depending on the value of the isBusy property. And I'm going to do that using behaviors. So I go to my assets library. And I'm going to take a go to state action, drag it on layout route. And in fact, I need two of those, one for busy and the other one for not busy. Now, by default, actions are triggered by an event trigger, like a click event or something like that. But here, I don't want that. I want it to be triggered when the value of isBusy gets a certain value, true or false. So I'm going to use a data trigger instead. I'm just going to build to make sure that the isBusy property is visible in Blend. Here we go. By the way, the friends here and their age especially is generated randomly in my design time code, which is why it just changed now in Blend. Okay? Now I can do a binding to the isBusy property. Blend knows that this is my data context because MVVM Lite is blendable, so things are wired in a blendable way. So I select isBusy, and I'm going to say that when this property is true, I want to go to the busy state. And I'm going to do the same for the other one. Select the data trigger, do the binding, and here I will say if it is false, I want to go to the not busy state. Now I still need to start and stop my animation. So I'm going to do that with a control storyboard action. And here too, I need two of those, one to start and one to stop the animation. Same routine, I want a data trigger. Now it's a little bit repetitive, but it's something that a non-coder can do. It's all visual, okay? Data binding is busy. And I'm going to say when it is true, I want to play the please wait animation. I'm going to do the same for the other one, same routine. That's the last time, I promise. Here we go. Data binding is busy. And I'm going to say when it is false, I want to stop the please wait animation. Okay, so now, just going to make sure that my web is set as startup. Here we go. And I can run this. Now for some reason it doesn't refresh, so my link to IE9 is broken here. Okay. And now if I click on refresh, I see that the animation is showing and playing. And when the friends are loaded, it's going to disappear. So here we have a communication from the view model to the view through a binding using behaviors. Now, how does it work in the Windows Phone? Well, the good news is that it's almost the same. If I go to the project and open the main page of the Windows Phone project, the Windows Phone version of this project, we see that, by the way, it's also completely blendable. Okay? And now I also define two states for that, and this is what the busy state looks like. I didn't do an animation here to keep things a little bit simpler, but, you know, it does work the same, right? So now I need to toggle those states. How can I do in the Windows Phone? Well, the good news is that you have, in the Windows Phone, go to state action and control storyboard action. But one thing you don't have out of the box is a data trigger. You have event trigger, and there are a couple of others. So now I have two solutions. Either I take a Silverlight 3 implementation of the data trigger and I put that in my application. But having done that in the past, I can tell you it's not really the best idea. Those things are a little bit unstable in Silverlight 3. In Silverlight 4, we had some improvements which make the implementation much easier. In Silverlight 3, I wouldn't recommend that. I would rather take the pragmatic approach and do a little bit of code behind. So let's do that, and yes, this is an MVVM presentation where we do code behind. So I'm going to open here mainpage.xaml.cs for the phone, and I'm going to drag here, I'm going to get a reference to my data context, which is a master view model. So I do have a dependency, okay? But this one is pretty harmless again, because the view, I'm not going to unit test my view anyway. So having a dependency to my data context is okay. I can know my own data context. I don't want to have the contrary. I don't want to have a dependency on the view in the view model. Now what I'm going to do is go implement the onNavigated2 method. And here I'm going to grab the data context, cast it to MasterView model, and attach to the property changed event. This property change event is where I'm using the visual state manager to go to the busy state or the not busy state. So basically, I'm doing what the go-to state behavior would do. And here, I'm a good citizen, so since I hooked to the property change event in onNavigated2, I also want to unhook in onNavigated from. Okay, so now let's set that as startup, and we are going to run it. Going to load my friends, and I see that I have my please wait cache, which shows. Here we go. So we did a little bit of code behind, but it's, you know, pretty harmless, and really it makes our life a little bit easier than going with the CVite3 implementation of the data trigger, which is a bit tricky. Good, now let's talk about those view service injection. And I'm going to do a dialog service for Windows Phone 7 here. To do that, I'm going to, first of all, let me show you why. I'm going to go to my friend service, and I'm going to set the URL here to something which doesn't exist. Then I'm going to run the application. So I'm going to have an error, and the error is going to be shown by the master view model with a standard message box. Okay. So that's very ugly. First of all, you cannot style it at all. You don't have any control on the look and feel of that. Second of all, you didn't hear it, but it's very loud. So at 3 a.m., when I'm doing stuff on my phone in bed and my wife is sleeping, it wakes her up. The next morning, she's angry. Is that the worst user experience ever? Okay? So you don't want to do that. We shoot for good user experience, so I'm going to take control over that. To do this, I'm going to add an interface called iDialog service. And this iDialog service has methods to show an exception, to show a message, get feedback from the user, and if you really want, for example, for debug purpose, show, you know, the ugly message box. Now, since I have this here, I can go to my master view model, and I can add a property of type iDialog service. I don't know where it comes from, but I know what it does. Okay? Now I'm going to go where I'm actually showing the message box, which is this line here. I'm going to remove that. And instead, I'm going to use the dialog service to show the exception. Now obviously here this is going to fail because this is still null, so I need an implementation of the dialog service. One way to provide an implementation would be to go on the mainpage.xaml.cs and here to go ahead and implement iDialog service. But then I have to do all those methods in all the pages of my applications. Okay, we don't want to do that. Let's be a little bit more rational. I'm going to do a phone page base. Like this, I can reuse that in all the pages. And this phone page base is pretty cool because it can be actually encapsulated in an assembly and reused in all your phone applications. Okay. So this phone page page is a phone application page, but it is also an iDialog service. And to keep the implementation abstracted, I'm going to rely on a convention, which is that I have a dialog control on the page of type iDialog control. And I'm going to get this dialog control by name. Okay? Now this is the same pattern that you do when you create custom controls in Silverlight. And you have a data control template, and in onApply template, you go and get the part which has a name, and you get the part by name, okay? Now, if you don't find the part, you have to have a fallback solution. If you find the part, you can attach your events to that. And here I'm doing exactly the same. If I can find the dialog control, I'm going to use it. If not, I'm going to fall back to the message box. Okay, so now we have this phone page base. So I'm going to take my main page, and I'm going to make it a phone page base. Now I know that phone page base is also an iDialog service, so I can say I'm going to inject myself into the view model through the property. Here we go. Just need to save and build. And then I'm going to be, again, a good citizen. Since I assign it in onNavigated to, I'm going to reset that to null in onNavigated from, just in case. Here we go. Now my main page, notice that it still has some squigglies, okay? The problem is that the XAML also needs to know that this is a phone page base. And that's probably the most annoying part of the whole thing. But the good news is that you can do a view template, load that into Visual Studio, and reuse that. Instead of doing new phone application page, you do a new phone page base, okay? So I'm going to just copy that here, Control-H, and replace that with helper's phone page base, which is the actual implementation. Replace all. Okay. Here we go. So now my XAML is okay. Now what I still need is the actual control which is going to show the message. Okay? So we know that this has to be an iDialog control. So let's take this interface. This is also one of those interfaces which can be put into a separate assembly for reuse. It has what you need to, you know, set the message, set the title, maybe a confirm and cancel button. Is showing an error so that you can change the style of your custom message. And also show and hide and get callback. I need an implementation of that, so I made here a custom control, which is going to be placed again on top of everything, on all the pages which need to show a dialogue. Okay? So this here, custom message box, is an iDialog control. Knowing that, I can go into my XAML. And on top of everything, meaning at the very end of my file here, I will add just two lines of XAML to have this custom message box. And it is named dialog control, just like the convention requires. So now at this point, I can run my Windows Phone 7 application. Oops. I still have the error, the wrong URL, but this time I have a much nicer experience. And you can reuse that in different applications. Okay? So that would be the dialog service injection. Now let's talk about navigation service, another one of those view services. Now to show you that, I'm going to switch to another application because I wanted to show that in Silverlight 4 and also in WP7. In WP7, all applications are navigation applications. So when you create them, they are already like that. In Silverlight 4, you need to specify that it has to be a navigation application. So when you do file new project, you choose new navigation application. First of all, let me show you what the application does. I'm going to connect to the CNN.com RSS feed, download the RSS, and then when I click on an item, I'm navigating to a different page. Notice that I have, you know, binding with a back button, so I can go back and select another page. In Windows Phone 7, it works exactly the same, and in fact, here too, I am reusing all my design time code, all the service code, all the model code, and all the view model code, so it works exactly the same. Only the XAML is different. I can load the items. I can select one. I also have integration with the back button, so that's the same experience. First of all, let's talk about how the navigation works. Navigation relies, again, on an interface called iNavigation Service. This is just the minimum that you need to do navigation. Okay, navigate to, go back, and also the navigating event handler, which you can cancel. Now, I have an implementation of that here in Silverlight 4. And this is going to rely on what we know of navigation applications in Silverlight 4. What we know about them is that they have a main page which doesn't move. And the main page has a frame which is going to load the views. and it is here. Here, here, here. Okay? Now the frame is actually the navigation service in Silverlight 4. Okay? So I have, here it's called content frame, but I don't have access to that from the outside. So I have exposed it here on my page under the name navigation frame. Now in my navigation service, I'm going to go and get the main page, which is main application.current.root.visual. And then I have access to my navigation frame, which is the actual navigation service. Okay, so my navigation service here is a wrapper around that. And then I can do my navigation, navigate, go back, etc. In Windows Phone 7, it's almost the same with a tiny difference. I also have the iNavigation service. That's the same file, actually. This is just a shortcut. The implementation is just a little bit different because in Windows Phone 7, we work with a phone application frame, not with just a frame. Again, in Windows Phone 7, all applications are navigation applications, so this phone application frame is application.current.root.visual. Okay? Now, I can use my mainframe to do my navigation, just like before, navigate, go back, etc. Now, this is used by the view model thanks to an injection. So here I am registering my navigation service for iNavigation service. And in my home view model, I'm going to just inject that in the constructor, which, again, Simple IOC is doing. Here I have my injection. Okay? So that works fine. Now there is one thing which we need to precise. Here I have a large number of very small view models, and they are very short-lived. So I don't want to create them from the start of the application. Now, in the previous demo, in the JSON demo, I was creating my view models at the start of the application because I had a small number, and I knew that they were very relevant to the application. I wanted them to be here. Okay? Here we are going to choose another strategy. We are going to create those on demand. So let's go to the home view model, and I will show you the show news method, which is called when you click on one of those items. What I'm going to do here is create the new news item view model on demand, and I'm going to store that in a cache using a key, which is the link of the item. So that's a URL, okay? I just need a unique key. In that case, a URL is a unique identifier by definition, so I use that. I'm going to do the cache. There are multiple implementations of caches in .NET, but here I'm going to use my IOC container to do the cache. Just choose a simple implementation. And I'm going to cache it only if it doesn't exist already in the cache. Okay, I optimize a little bit. Now here I could have different strategies. I could say I want to keep those items in the cache for 10 minutes, or I could say I want to keep 15 of them only and do a FIFO, etc. In that case, I just keep all of them, but they are created on demand. And then only I'm going to navigate to the page. At the navigation, I'm going to give the link, the URL, the key, to the page through the query string. Because in XAML, you can have query strings, just like in HTML. You can add here a question mark and then put your key. Okay? Now we'll go into the page. And here into my page, what I will do is get the query string. I'm going to check in the cache if I already have this item, if it already exists. And if yes, I'm going to grab it and to assign it to the data context, okay, on demand. Now, this is done in code behind, which means that I lose blendability now. And in fact, I can show you that because if I go here, this is where I have my news item view. And you see that except for the link go to page, I do not see anything. So I cannot design against that. But fortunately, there is a way. If I go here in the news item view.xaml, I'm going to use those design time properties to do that. So for example, here I have design width and design height. Those are only valid in Blend or Insider, in the designer. They are ignored at runtime. And there is another one which I can use. which is called the data context. This is a data context at design time only. I'm going to set that to a D design instance. I'm going to say the type of this instance is my news item view model. And then I'm going to say is design time creatable, it's a cool property name, equals true. Now all this is out of the box in Visual Studio, in Blend, etc. I have to type the XAML. I cannot do that in Blend, but you have IntelliSense to support you, so it's not that bad. What's going to happen here is that when Blend or Cider at design time only reaches this line, it's going to grab the news item view model. It's going to look for a default constructor. It only works with default constructor, but you can have multiple constructor, like one for with injection of services for the runtime and one default for the design time. And it's going to execute it, which means here I'm going to check if I'm in design mode. If yes, I'm going to create a dummy object, a dummy news item, if you want. So now if I build this, here we go. And I go into Expression Blend. It's going to reload. Yes? And here we go. I have my design time data appearing. So now I can go and do my style, do the title, and do the text. Okay? So again, this is two strategies. One strategy, creating view models from the start of the application, making sure they are here, they are very significant, okay? They are long-lived. They can take care of their own design time data. Or we have a large number of small view models. They are short-lived. They are created on demand. We lose blendability, but we can gain it back with a D data context. Okay, so this is what we did. All right? Injection of view services. And now we want to test that. When we test, we really don't want to drag the view into the test. It's going to complicate things tremendously. So I'm going to remove the view, and instead, I'm going to create a mock dialog service. Actually, to be exact, it's a stub, because I'm going to hand-roll it. I'm going to make it by hand. Okay? So I'm still going to name that a mock and sue me. My unit test is going to interact with the mock dialog service in order to test the view model. Let's see how we can do that. I'm going to show you that in Silverlight 4 and in Windows Phone 7. In Silverlight 4, if you install the Silverlight toolkit, you can do File, New Project, New Silverlight Unit Test. In Windows Phone 7, unfortunately, you don't have that. But Roger Peters, who is also a Silverlight MVP, made a cheat sheet. This is the one I always use, where he does step-by-step how can you create a unit test application for Windows Phone 7. So I'm going to go back to my JSON demo. And I am going to add two projects that I prepared, one for Silverlight 4 and one for WP7. Oops. Add existing project. Here we go. I'm going to do the same for Windows Phone 7. And here we go. Okay, let's do the Silverlight 4 first. In the references, I have a reference to the project that I want to test, which is a Silverlight 4 version of this project. Now, the scenario I want to test is when the user clicks on the button, the refresh command is called, the view model, the master, is going to send the request through the data service, through the friend service, and I'm going to simulate that there is an error, pass this exception back to the view model with a callback, and the master view model is in charge of giving that error to the dialog service for display. Okay? This is one isolated scenario, so I'm going to unit test that. To do that, I'm going to use this mock dialog service, which is an implementation of iDialog service. So for the view model, it does exactly the same. But instead of showing a view, which you cannot test, I am going to store the error for later. And then the implementation itself of iDialog service, I'm just going to store the error when show error is called. Now, I also have a mock for the friend service, for the data service. This is an implementation of iFriend service. And here I'm going to configure it with an expected exception. And when getFriends is called, I'm just going to call back with that exception. I'm going to simulate that there is an error on the line. Now let's see the actual object we want to test. Here what I'm going to do is create the mocks with an expected exception. I'm going to create the actual object I want to test, the master view model, and I'm going to inject the mock friend service and the mock dialog service. For the master view model, it doesn't matter who created those. The master view model just knows what they do. Okay? Then I'm going to execute the load friends command. So what happens is that the service is hit, there is an error, callback, pass to the dialog service, and I'm going to assert that, in fact, it has been passed to the dialog service. So it's a small, isolated scenario. It's perfect for a unit test, okay? Eventually, you will have a lot more in your application. But the point is, you can rerun your unit tests as much as you want. If you change something, you can run them all just to make sure you didn't break something that was working before, okay, etc. In Windows Phone 7, it works exactly the same. In fact, I'm going to share the code. I'm going to just add existing item, go and take my CLI4 test, the test and the mocks. I'm going to add as a link, so I'm sharing the code here. And let's set that as startup and run it, just to show that my test is passing. Here we go. So this is the UI for the unit test on Windows Phone 7. I'm going to run all my tests, and the test is green. Have a little bit more information in case you are interested in the results. Okay? Okay. So we are at the end of the presentation. It was a lot of code, okay? The pace is maybe a little bit fast, but as I said, everything will be published, the video in a couple of days on the Mix website, and the code will be on my blog as soon as I find the time to do it. Okay, so pretty soon, tonight probably. Also, if you want more information on MVVM, and especially the MVVM Lite Toolkit, you can go in those websites. I don't have a lot of time for questions, but I will be very happy to take your questions in the hallway. So don't hesitate to come and talk to me. Or tomorrow and Thursday, I'm also staying at Mix, so don't hesitate to come. I love the interaction. You can also catch me on Twitter, El Bunion. If you tag it with Deep Dive MVVM, it makes it a little bit easier for me to find. I just want you to ask to fill your evaluation form. That's very kind of you, and it helps us to know what we did well and what we did not so well. And finally, thank you very much for your attention, and happy MVVM programming. Thank you.